Hello, and welcome to the podcast for TheForce.net. My name's Eric, and I'm your host, bringing you the latest in Star Wars news and events. And we're now into single digits. That's right, only 8 more days until most of us are standing in line at a theater somewhere, holding the tickets we purchased weeks ago online, hoping to get a decent seat for the last Star Wars movie we'll ever see in a theater for the first time, Revenge of the Sith. And as I promised, I've got some reviews for you guys. And since many of these reviews contain spoilers, I'm only reading portions of the reviews. So for the sake of full disclosure, none of these are full reviews, and there are parts where I'm editing a few words for the sake of content, but never to change their meaning. I'm just doing this so that you'll have a spoiler-free podcast episode, and yet you can still check out the reviews that have been posted online that contain spoilers. Also, Scott, one of the founders of TFN, has come up with a great parent's guide to Episode 3, which, considering some of the movie's content, might not be a bad idea for some of you with younger children. This, too, contains spoilers, so I'm giving you a spoiler-free version of that, too. Now, if you haven't figured this out yet, I'm going to throw my two cents in here and there. That's just what I do. So I want to clarify where I'm coming from. I've read the book, I've seen the comic, I've watched more footage than what's available on the internet, but I have not yet seen the film. The people writing these reviews have, so take whatever I say with a grain of salt. Just wanted to clarify that. First off, let's cover the parental aspect real quick. You might want to be careful taking your kids to see this, depending on how young they are. Again, avoiding major spoilers, I can tell you that dead bodies are shown, a lot of them. And some of them are children, though they're not graphic. Many good guys die, and it's always at the hands of people they trusted. A moment of physical spousal abuse is shown, albeit a brief one. And some young children might also have issues, given that Anakin, now the father of Luke and Leia, has betrayed everyone and has become evil. Some kids might have abandonment issues, or wonder if their own daddy's going to do something like that. Things might be a tad bit intense for kids if their mother is pregnant. I know some of this probably sounds really silly and far-fetched, but I'm sure there are some kids out there who are going to have issues with all this, especially all the betrayal and the way Anakin, who's been the hero up until now, treats Padme and Obi-Wan. As for the visuals, the Emperor gets pretty scary-looking, and of course there's what happens to Anakin at the end. That being said, I think it's only the really young ones who will have issues. Based on what I'm hearing and what Scott said so far, I don't think that any kids who have hit double digits will really have any problem coping with the film. As for the younger crowd, nobody knows your kids better than you do. Or I hope not, anyway. I mean, Scott and I are good guides, but we can't make your decisions for you. My advice would be to get a babysitter, go see the movie yourself, and decide on your own. On to the reviews. There are way too many reviews floating around at the moment for me to quote every single one in its entirety. Instead, I'm going to quote segments from the various reviews that have been posted so far. The vast majority of these come from people who attended the press screenings last Thursday, though a couple go back to about a week prior. First up is Robert Sanchez from IESB.net, whom I had the pleasure of meeting at the convention. He writes, "Revenge of the Sith is the best of the prequels and second only to Empire Strikes Back. Without going through any spoilers, I want you to know that this is a great movie. This is a movie that we, as Star Wars fans, have been waiting for since Return of the Jedi. The movie starts out with action and is non-stop through the entire 2 hours. It's no surprise that this is the darkest of all the Star Wars films. This movie does deliver the best of special effects that ILM has to offer. Anakin's transition to Darth Vader is very emotional to watch, and once again, Ian McDiarmid steals the show. He's just fabulous as Palpatine. There is no doubt that you want to see Revenge of the Sith, and make sure you see it in a theater that offers digital projection. That is the only way to go." Personally, I agree with Robert. If you can see it digitally, go for it. It's much better that way. I remember seeing Episode 2, the film print, first at the midnight showing, and then the following day at about 10 a.m. I saw it digitally, and it was just a world of difference. So if you can see it digitally, I highly recommend it. Next up is TFN's very own Scott Chitwood, though this review is taken from his post at ComingSoon.net. He writes, "Revenge of the Sith is probably the best of the three prequels. It takes everything that was good about Attack of the Clones and reduces everything that was bad about it. You have cool battles, Yoda's in a lot of action, more cool bad guys, and no Jar Jar. Well, at least no Jar Jar dialogue. That being said, you also still have some bad dialogue, slow scenes between the action sequences, and cheesy romantic moments. Fortunately, none of these weak points drags the film down like they did in Attack of the Clones. With everything said and done, I think my favorite Star Wars films from best to worst are The Empire Strikes Back, A New Hope, Revenge of the Sith, Return of the Jedi, Attack of the Clones, and The Phantom Menace. But ask me again in a year and my ranking will most likely change. The acting this time around seems to be better for a prequel. Ian McDiarmid really steals the show as Palpatine. The way he manipulates Anakin's feelings is superbly done. From his look to his voice, it's both impressive and disturbing. McDiarmid also delivers a number of the lines with just the right amount of feeling to really irk you. Also stealing the show again is Yoda. Every scene he is in is great. His final confrontation scene ends up being the real impressive moment and almost upstages the final battle between Anakin and Obi-Wan. This is also probably the best Obi-Wan performance by Ewan McGregor. He shows so much more emotion this time around that you can't help but notice the difference. McGregor plays him with a lot of humor early on, and then with a lot of anger and regret towards the end. Natalie Portman is also pretty good as Padme. In the first half of the film, her performance is not that great because she's stuck doing only romantic dialogue with Anakin. However, as the film gets darker and darker, she's able to do a little bit more, and she does it well. The same pretty much goes for Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker. He's in top form when he's in action, brooding for the camera or raging. In Revenge of the Sith, there's a lot of that, as you would expect. I should also note that Jimmy Smits gets a lot more to do with Senator Bail Organa this time around. Unfortunately, there's no real standout action scene in this movie like there were in the previous prequels. Revenge of the Sith didn't really have one moment that stood out better than the others. None of them were jaw-droppers, but none of them were bad either. The effects are pretty much excellent across the board. I haven't been crazy about John Williams' work in this movie, but his score did stand out in a few key scenes. The opening scene had some great war drums that instantly set the tone of the film. There was some really great creepy music about halfway through the movie that shows things are really beginning their downward spiral for our heroes. I mentioned at the beginning I spoiled myself silly before seeing this movie. I don't think it hurt me at all while viewing the film. In fact, I think I had an advantage over other audience members because I found myself better able to understand some of the more confusing moments of the film. I also had a little more background on the characters and situations, which helped me considerably. And even knowing the entire plot, there were still a couple of surprises for me. The whole opening scene is different than either the novels or the comics depict. Revenge of the Sith does have its problems, though. First and foremost, it's a little hard to buy Anakin's turn to the dark side. He does so very abruptly. He goes from being a loyal Jedi to going over to the dark side within a few hours. Admittedly, Lucas had to turn him within the short running time of the film, but it didn't seem like a natural progression in the movie. It needed more time to develop. Overall, I think George Lucas has learned from his previous mistakes on the other films. While this is by no means a perfect movie, I think it'll please fans. That wraps up Scott's review. Scott hits on most of the complaints other people have voiced about the film, the most common being that Anakin's turn happened too quickly. I don't mean to get on a soapbox here, but I'm telling you guys, you might want to consider reading the book before seeing the film. Seriously. Things will make a lot more sense if you do. Here's a review from one of Scott's colleagues from ComingSoon.net, Blake Wright. He says, "The performances in Revenge of the Sith range from wasted to superb. On the plus side, my hat must once again be tipped to Ian McDiarmid as Chancellor/Emperor Palpatine. This is his movie, and again he delivers a deliciously direct performance laced with just the right amounts of subtle arrogance as the Chancellor and full-on hellfire as the Emperor that makes the film a joy to watch when he's on screen. Ewan McGregor solidifies his role as Obi-Wan, a wise, unwavering Jedi that holds true to the Order even though his heart is clearly breaking at the loss of his apprentice to the dark side. Hayden Christensen is better here than in Clones, though there are still some moments of awkwardness, especially with Padme, that seem forced. His furrowed brow and brooding glare work overtime during the second half of the film, and it works. The effects in Revenge of the Sith gets top marks. ILM has made wondrous strides in the animation of Yoda. Where Attack of the Clones CG Yoda was very good, the Revenge of the Sith version is almost flawless. You can really find yourself forgetting that he's a digital rendering. The fight scenes were all turned up a notch as well, and there were plenty of them. Each had their own interest and appeal. The music of Revenge of the Sith was first rate, if only because most of the main pieces were variations on the themes from previous films. Williams still deserves a lot of credit for bringing the extra level of intensity and drama to the storyline. What didn't work? My main beef with Revenge of the Sith is a bit on the selfish side. It was something that I wanted but did not get. And that was a revelation, an epiphany. I wanted the Luke, I am your father, kind of jaw-dropping truth to be laid out there for all to see, but it didn't happen. What you see is what you get with this film, which is not necessarily bad, but I was personally in favor of finding out that, for example, Qui-Gon was a bad guy, but he wasn't. The one glaring weirdness was just how quick Anakin was talked into becoming Palpatine's apprentice. It would have been nice to see a lot more conflict going on there, but I suppose time is money. I remember back to one San Diego Comic-Con after Clones came out. McCallum showed up to talk about Episode 3 and promised the eager crowd that all of the questions would be answered. Hardly. And the film itself raised questions that it didn't answer, at least not directly. In all, it is better than Menace and Clones, but I won't go so far as to say that I'd put it ahead of Jedi or anywhere near the others. Fans will rejoice, it will make millions, and I will see it again. That's the end of Blake's review. I'd just like to comment for a second on something Blake said. While it's not necessarily a flaw with something that's in the movie, I think many people may be disappointed in what's not in the movie. I want to be very clear, from what I know of the film, most of the threads are wrapped up, but not every thread. I'm not trying to put a negative spin on things here, but I know that 99% of a person's enjoyment of a film has to do not with whether the film was good or not, but whether their expectations were met or exceeded. So don't expect a big plot twist, and don't expect all of the threads to be wrapped up. Here's a great review from Harry Knowles, who runs one of my favorite websites, Ain't It Cool News. This was a hard review to include here because Harry goes on for quite some time about his feelings on the movie, rather than what would be considered a traditional review. So I've had to chop it up quite a bit. I've also had to censor a bit for language, too. But after you go see the movie, I highly recommend you hit ainticoolnews.com and check out his review. It's a good read. He says, I'm having a really hard time writing about this one. It's just so big, so full of literally everything that I've wanted to see in all the prequels, but crammed all into this one. This really is the big Michael Corleone episode of Star Wars. It's where all the traps are sprung, all the cards are laid out on the table, where everybody dies, all is lost, and evil rules the galaxy. That's what makes the film so hard to talk about, at least off of first viewing. Let me see if I can explain this. The film makes you powerless to change things. It's like sitting still for a tragedy right from the get-go, but unlike Titanic, you don't have it all spelt out yet. Unless you've read all the spoilers, and I don't really know what you spoiler lovers will think, just because for me, I knew basically what was going to happen, the broad strokes. I've gone out of my way to ignore as many spoilers as possible, which is a near impossible thing to do when you're being emailed by everyone on Earth 300 images a day, 40 reviews a day now, and we're sent all the books, comics, score, everything from publicity firms. I bought that talking Yoda toy, and the next thing I know, the little green guy's trying to tell me the story of Revenge of the Sith. It's so hard to be pure on this. There's just so much information out there, everywhere. Revenge of the Sith is a masterpiece. The final piece of the puzzle Lucas first presented me at age 6. 27 years later, the jigsaw is complete, and it's darn near the most tragically cool thing I've ever seen put to film. We won't see another like this. This is it. We'll see enormous sci-fi fantasy told with more focus and even grander visions in our lifetime, but we'll never care as much about a story like this one. For our generation, Star Wars is our mythology, the big story we live to see told the first time. For those of you that were kids in lines in 1977 through to the coming weeks, I have to say it has been an absolute honor to do this with y'all. We all know where we each were at the opening of all these films. In 2 weeks, this is your last story. I will never see a new Star Wars movie with my father again. I'll see many more movies, but this is the last Star Wars. This one counts. This one is beautiful. This is the last one. Remember, this isn't a Star Wars movie to cheer for, to erupt into applause and call cool. If you really love Star Wars, this one is heartache. Not only is it the end of a nearly 30-year journey for us, it really is a story of how things got so bad that the good guys had to be a rebellion, where the Jedi had to hide, and how evil ruled the galaxy. That's the end of Harry's review. Okay, I just got to interject this real quick. It's hard enough to smoothly read somebody else's writing, but for a northerner to have to say, y'all, and just have it roll off of the tongue smoothly, I don't know. Something about that just doesn't work. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Make all the Northerner jokes you want. It's not going to help. I got to say, I agree with Harry. It's really hard to comprehend this, but think about it. Is anyone ever going to wait in line for a movie like this again? I mean, I can't imagine ever waiting in line for more than 2 hours for a movie again, even if it's something really incredible. But for episode 3, even though I got my tickets online a week or two ago, I'm actually showing up that morning for the line. Why? Just because. This is the last Star Wars. No, I'm not so desperate for a good seat that I feel I need to wait in line. I'm standing in line because this is the last time when I'll be able to walk up to a line for a movie and strike up a conversation with anyone in the line, all strangers, and have them be just as excited about seeing the film as I am. I'm doing this mainly because I won't be able to ever do this again. I predict that never again will a movie or a series of movies have this type of effect on pop culture, that there will be this sense of community standing outside of a theater again, especially given the advent of online ticket ordering. Lines are now extinct, and the lines maintained all around the country on May 18th will all be snuffed out hour by hour as various time zones reach midnight, and such lines will never again take place. So as Harry points out, there is great attachment to this film for many people. And seeing this film is as much about the end of an era of entertainment in our lives as it is the fictional era taking place in the film. Next up, we've got TFN's Josh Griffin, who writes, "It is perhaps paced awkwardly in places, and has the now infamous cheesy lines now and again, but this is clearly the part of the story Lucas was most anxious to share. Unmistakably, this is the meat of the backstory. We now get to see it in all of its glory. It is made more powerful by the setup of the earlier films, and for many they will find redemption here. The opening battle was fantastic. Visually, this film is near perfect. From the opening sequence to the very end, there is precious little that may look off. In fact, with all of the new worlds, characters, and vehicles, I think it's safe to say that ILM has gone to the next level. This does have a visual effects nomination and win written all over it. The lightsaber battles are second to none, and there are plenty of them to go around. Ian McDiarmid in this film is incredible. I felt his character was a bit too happy and eager in the opening moments, but it's corrected quickly and he goes the other way especially fast. I have nothing but pure joy over his addition to the saga. He nearly steals the show from Anakin and does an amazing job. Once you get to the opera scene, prepare yourself to be blown away." Other notable standouts are from Ewan McGregor, especially in the last half of the film. He truly believes the ways of the Jedi are the right path and is willing to even take out his own apprentice who betrayed him. After the romantic scenes, I begin to really dig Hayden Christensen, too. He delivers some powerful emotions later in the film that bring added depth to the character. The featured score isn't nearly as memorable as Even Across the Stars. I'm glad Duel of the Fates made a reprise, and there are some great ambient tracks at key moments that add to the tension. And let's not forget about one lengthy scene that has no music at all. Very nice. Listen for it and see if you agree. And it's always great to hear elements from the early John Williams work as well. The end of the movie was satisfying, wrapping up many loose ends and bridging the prequel-classic divide nicely. Stuff you might not like as much. Natalie Portman isn't brilliant in this film. She just can't seem to pull off her character. The Kashyyyk battle is way too short. If you saw all of the trailers and the episode 3 footage that Rick McCallum showed at the celebration, then unfortunately you've seen much of it. It was so stunning, it's too bad we didn't get to see more of it. Overall, this is a great Star Wars film. The best of the prequels, without question. In many fans' minds, this will fall under Empire and A New Hope, and I think that's a fair analysis. A powerful movie that you'll not want to miss, weakened by one vulnerable act and a few nitpicky problems. I saw it once today, and I'm already anxious to see it again. You will be too. That wraps up Josh's review. I don't have a whole lot to add here, except that if you're keeping up with spoilers, I recommend you go to theforce.net and read the entire review. I had to skip a lot here as to avoid spoilers. Here's Garth Franklin from the very cool movie website darkhorizons.com. He writes, "As one of the seemingly few net reviewers with no real love of Star Wars, old or new, I was born in 78, so it was a few years before my time. The good word is, Revenge of the Sith is actually a refreshingly good film overall, and easily the best of the prequels. Like the other two, it remains a rather hokey and stilted affair that lacks the warm fun and smoothness of the original trilogy, but I am glad to say that it is a big step up from the simply woeful Phantom Menace and the run-of-the-mill Attack of the Clones. While the acting, story, and humor remains clunky and flat, Sith is an enjoyable spectacle with glossy visuals and a refreshingly dark and sinister tone. The alien environments look glorious, the loose threads are for the most part effectively tied up, and while quite a few moments are laughably bad, others approach greatness. There's one scene where Anakin and Padme are on separate balconies looking out at the city and with the weight of the world on their shoulders. The looks, the sunset, and John Williams' superb score swell to deliver a moment that feels like great filmmaking on hand. Why does this one work so much better than the other two? Simple, really. Not much in the way of padding. Oh sure, there are moments thrown in which look cool yet aren't needed, but for the most part, the action actually ties in with the plot. Whereas the last two felt like they were all too strung out, Sith remains a tight affair as it rushes to move events along toward the way the original 1977 Star Wars began. In fact, Lucas does a commendable job of essentially covering all the bases, leaving very few elements dangling. The other thing is, he seems to have learned his lessons from the last two a little, as have most of the crew. The result is the effects are the best yet, the action feels more relevant, and the performances, while still subpar at times, actually seem a tad more genuine. As an audience, knowing the way everything is going to end actually adds to the movie's feeling of inevitable tragedy. The darker sensibility in actions, many of which take place off-screen, unfortunately, is a big bonus too, as it finally feels like we're watching a Star Wars movie that takes some chances again. Still, it wouldn't be a Star Wars prequel without a raft of problems, and many of them haven't gone away. The romance is still awkwardly bad, not helped by either actor. Portman and McGregor are capable of so much more, and yet they've both been heavily hampered in these movies. McGregor seems to snap out of it at times, but Portman, stuck in a stay-at-home wife role this time around, seems bored. Christensen's acting has gone from wooden soap opera level to very average mainstream, thankfully toning down the attempts at ranting and trying for something a little more understated this time. The motives for Anakin's inevitable fall from grace do seem ultimately a bit rushed and unbelievable, though some of the film's better moments comes from the prequel trilogy's real quiet achiever, Ian McDiarmid, as Palpatine. While McDiarmid does go way over the top with some lines he delivers, others strike with real resonance, and it's great to finally get to see him in some action in both the physical and narrative sense of the word. Kudos to Lucas for sticking the aliens in the background and letting the human drama dominate this time around. Jar Jar has a 3-second silent cameo, and C-3PO has 3 lines, and none of them are bad jokes. The alien environments are also much better and much more imaginative. A lava planet, a civilization built inside a giant sinkhole, a giant forest swamp, and of course Coruscant. True, much of it still reeks of blue screen CG creations with people inserted in them, but for the most part they work. There are many elements of this harkening back to the original trilogy, some working better than others. The ships, the clothing, and music all feel much more like the original trilogy than the other two. While the effects are spectacular, the action doesn't help to enhance it at times. The wide shots look splendid, but much of the time Lucas frustratingly cuts to awkward and very tight close-ups. The result is, in these high-speed battle scenes and in the duels as well, one almost gets nausea from all the flashing lights and moving camera. There's simply too much going on, and we're focused in on one little segment which undermines the scale of these scenes. One thing that hasn't changed, though, is the humor. It's as forced and flat as ever. There's one, maybe two odd laughs, but the other jokes are so painful it's cringe-inducing. Thankfully, the film stays relatively dark, so the humor isn't needed. As I've said before, the problem with this franchise, more than any other series, is that everyone comes into this with different preconceptions. More than any other science fiction tale, the Star Wars movies inspire a level of unconditional love or bitterness amongst reviewers. The former, the lovers, deliberately ignore the giant flaws that they would take other films to task on, and the latter, the haters, over-exaggerate the problems with which they would otherwise ignore in other movies this summer. These are popcorn movies, and so the bigger fan you are, the stronger your level of enjoyment or loathing will be. As a sci-fi fan who really likes A New Hope, loves Empire, enjoys Jedi, hated Phantom, and tolerated clones, I found I enjoyed Sith. It certainly doesn't validate the first two prequels, but it's the only one of the trilogy that actually works as both a good summer movie and a solid sci-fi movie in its own right. It's a shame that just as the Star Wars universe is finally getting interesting again, it has to go away. And that's the end of Garth's review. Looking back at it, I think I may have read the vast majority of his review, so hopefully if he finds out, he's not too upset about it. But I simply had to include this review. Not only does it give us a look at the film from someone who's not a diehard Star Wars fan, but Garth's reviews are normally very intelligent and articulate. If you're into movies in general and you haven't checked out darkhorizons.com, you should go bookmark it. It's a great site, and the least I can do for using his review here is give him a good plug. I've got two celebrity reviews for you as well. The first is from Edgar Wright, director of Shaun of the Dead. And the second one is from someone whom I believe is a friend of his, Kevin Smith. First up, though, here's Edgar's review, which I had to edit a little bit for language. Fear not, Sith happens. Having just seen Revenge of the Sith, it is my happy duty to report to you that it does not suck. Finally, after 6 years of criticism, Lucas clearly has a firework up his butt and delivers. If the first two films had only a smattering of tingle moments, Darth Maul and Yoda Foo, then this has at least 20. When it finished, I could only think of one word. Finally. The only sad aspect is that you wish he could go back and make episodes 1 and 2 better, or maybe delete them as he did the original versions of 4, 5, and 6. There are minor quibbles and annoyances, but these mostly peter out after the first half hour. Not to give away any spoilers, but I really could have done without the unnecessary comedy relief of the battle droids in the opening action sequence. The set piece otherwise kicks butt, but why oh why do the droids all have to sound like voices from Johnny Five? After that, the film takes on a darker tone, and even though there's still clunky dialogue to come, it doesn't seem to matter, because loads of stuff happens. All of the action in Sith works better because there's something at stake. We never feel like we're treading water and watching an 8-year-old play out wacky races in the desert for no apparent reason other than to sell Xbox games. Plus, people die. A lot. The body count is hugely impressive. There's also a curious feeling to the film in that, along with the high drama and high tragedy, there's a much bigger sense of fun. When you get to the final moments of Sith, you feel like you've watched a really good soap opera or a Bollywood film. Vader's big moment is especially like this. It's cliched, it's silly, it's camp, but it rocks. I shall say no more other than that Ian McDiarmid steals the film, the mouse robots are back, and the Godfather 2 style of cross-cutting is a bundle of fun. Okay, that's the end of Edgar's review. And I gotta say, while I didn't mind Episode 2 that much, I like Edgar's idea of deleting the first two prequel movies and starting over. The special editions were a little early for such complaints, but when the DVDs for the original trilogy finally came out, I was screaming, "Hey George, you, fixed the wrong films." I'm really hoping I come out of Episode 3 feeling like Edgar did. Yeah, the film wasn't flawless, but it was right. It had problems, but it was right. This is what Episode 3 was supposed to be. Here's our final review by none other than Kevin Smith. Many of you know who Kevin Smith is. For those who don't, he's the guy who did Clerks, Chasing Amy, Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back, Dogma, and a few other films. He's a big Star Wars fan, and there's a rumor going around that he may be involved in the upcoming Star Wars live-action television series. Here's the review he recently posted on his blog site. I'm going to have to do a lot of censoring here, both for language and spoiler content, but here we go. Revenge of the Sith is, quite simply, freaking awesome. This is the Star Wars prequel the haters have been whining for since Menace came out, and if they don't cop to that when they finally see it, they're lying. As dark as Empire was, this movie goes 1,000 times darker. Ian McDiarmid and Ewan McGregor steal the show, but Hayden Christensen silences any naysayers who wrote him off as too whiny in Clones. This is the flick that feels closest to episodes 4, 5, and 6, and because, for the first time since Return of the Jedi, there is a clear villain. Look, this is a movie I was genetically predisposed to love. I remember being 8 years old and reading in Starlog that Darth Vader became the half-man, half-machine he was following a duel with Ben Kenobi that climaxed with Vader falling into molten lava. Now, 26 years later, I finally got to see that long-promised battle, and it lived up to any expectations I still held. I was sad to see the flick end, but happy to know it's not the end of the Star Wars universe entirely. I've read stuff about a TV show. Sith doesn't happen. Sith rules. And that wraps up Kevin's review. And he just had to go and tease us about that TV show, didn't he? All right, that's it for this podcast, but here's a little glimpse of things to come. I know I've mentioned that I've got more interviews from C3 to post, but I've got to get some of the audio footage mailed to me, so they'll be delayed a little while. In the meantime, I'm going to be concentrating on Episode 3's release. I'll be setting up 2 roundtable discussions shortly, one dealing with the various plot threads that tie the 6 movies together, with the specific focus on Episode 3, and another about the television series. I'm also working on getting a part-time co-host, maybe 2. And I've got a couple of other things up my sleeve, too. So for those who have been asking about whether we'll still be doing the podcast after Episode 3 comes out, the answer is yes. We're just getting started. I want to thank you guys for the emails you sent in about the television series. I'm going to be addressing several of those during the roundtable discussion. But for now, I'd also like to hear your thoughts on what questions you want Episode 3 to answer for you. Or if you've kept up with the spoilers, what questions you're upset that it doesn't answer. You can send these answers, along with any questions or comments, to podcast@theforce.net. As a reminder, the opinions expressed in this podcast belong to myself and the aforementioned reviewers, and they do not necessarily represent the views of any other TFN staff members, nor that of Lucasfilm. TheForce.net is not affiliated with Lucasfilm in any way. Until next time, take care, and may the Force be with you.